Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, it's part two of this week's mailbag. We'll talk about how things would be different if the Heat never went 30-11 two seasons ago.
And then we'll talk about if Coach Spoelstra needs to find a leading man on offense and problems with the Heat's transition defense. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Ramil. Part one of this week's mailbag went up on Monday. We talked about some issues with the Heat's defense, why Deion Waiters still hasn't returned from his injury. But let's get on with part two, and we'll start with this question from Polstein, who asks, how do you think things would have played out if 30-11 never happened? Where would we be today? First of all, I love that we just call it 30-11. We all know, everybody listening to this podcast knows exactly what he's talking about. And it's a really interesting hypothetical, which we love here. Yes. And it's worth talking about because it seems the further we get away from 30-11, the crazier 30-11 was. And like it was just like this weird glitch in the matrix. Like this Heat team wasn't a 30-11 team, and yet they went 30-11 for the second half of that 2016-2017 season. And after that season, they ended up bringing back Deion Waiters, bringing back James Johnson, those Heat culture guys. They signed Kelly Olynyk. They took Bam Adebayo at number 14 that year, which going into that draft, you know, you and I were scouting guys like Markelle Fultz, who went ultimately number one. There was a good chance that, you know, after that first half of the season, Miami was going to end up with a top five pick in that draft. They ended up going 30-11. Going to the just missing the playoffs by a game, really a half game, tiebreaker against Chicago, and ended up taking Bam with the 14th pick. Bam looks good, but a lot of other guys went in that draft. So it's a really interesting kind of thought experiment, right, David?
Absolutely. Look, and I'll add this caveat that this season looks a lot like that season, unfortunately, that they started off so badly and then all of a sudden things clicked into place. Although we didn't see how they could click into place at that point and during that season. I can't see it this year either, but it kind of feels the same way. Although we're not expecting a miraculous return of Deion Waiters to help boost his team and clutch some big game, you know, hit some clutch shots against the Golden State Warriors or anything like that. But anyway, it's sad that we've gotten to this point now. And listening to the Toronto's broadcast after the Raptors win on Sunday, you heard Jonas Valanciunas talking about beating the Heat. And the thing he kept saying was, well, they play hard. And that's something you say about really bad teams. It's like, if they have nothing to offer, it's not like they're much of a challenge. It's like, well, they play hard. But you know, ultimately, we knew we were going to beat their ass because they suck.
Right. And gotta respect the opponent. They play hard and they made us earn this win.
Right,
that's always just like
great the Brooklyn Nets about that team.
Every team has said that about the Brooklyn Nets for the last 4 years. So,
but back to Polstein's questions. Look, you and I started talking about this before we started recording. It's a slippery slope. You know, one thing kind of snowballs into another, and you start cascading into these different realities, different possibilities, where all these different things could lead into another. And that 2016 offseason, it was so pivotal for this team. Or is it
the 2017 offseason?
2017 offseason was so pivotal because, of course, Miami was all in on getting Gordon Hayward, and then they kind of flipped the switch after he had signed with Boston, and they, again, as you pointed out, re-signed James Johnson, Deion Waiters, Olynyk, who was no longer, you know, he was renounced by Boston. So there was so much that they could have done differently if that had gone the way they had originally planned, but...
Well, let's start there. The number one thing that happens right off the bat, we can already say, they don't bring back Deion Waiters. They don't bring James Johnson back. Like, there's no reason to bring those guys back. So they're, and, you know, a lot of people point to that 30-11, you know, stretch there as the reason why Miami has all these bad contracts. It's really only two. They went into that season, they matched the Brooklyn Nets offer to Tyler Johnson. So he was already on the books. And they had already given Whiteside that big raise, that max contract, basically. So he was already on the books. So even despite the 30-11 stretch, the Heat would still have Tyler Johnson and Whiteside. They would be without Deion Waiters, and they would be without James Johnson, more than likely. And so those are the two bad contracts. Then you can argue the Kelly Olynyk deal, right? We know that they've liked Kelly Olynyk going even into that season. Boston was making a run for Hayward. So
when I talked to Olenek and asked him why he signed there, part of what he pointed out was the culture that he had kind of seen on display this season before.
Oh, interesting.
So if they had only won 20-something games, he probably wouldn't have cared too much about that culture. I mean, even though they toss a lot of money at him, more than maybe other suitors, I don't know, that would have been as appealing a destination for a guy like Olenek.
That's interesting. So let's say Olenek doesn't end up signing. So, all right, that's three bad contracts. That's a lot. Yeah. Or not bad contracts, but three big contracts. The only bad contract, in my opinion, is the Dion one.
But you still have Tyler and Hassan under contract, which is
Got Tyler and Hassan. You probably don't try to do that weird, unlikely bonus structure and bring back Wayne Ellington. You probably just let Wayne walk, right? There's no reason to really bring him back.
Good point.
But ultimately, yeah. So you've got a bunch of now you have a bunch of cap space, but you're kind of a lousy team. So who are you really signing with that space? I kind of liken that team maybe to a Dallas Mavericks situation where they're at now. Yeah, you maybe you're trying to chase the Kevin Durants and the Gordon Haywards, and yeah, you're Pat Riley, so you get the meetings. But ultimately, you're not a great team. It's not that attractive of a situation, so you don't end up with those guys. Instead, you end up with the Harrison Barnes and the DeAndre Jordan types. That's probably where Miami ends up. They probably end up signing one of those kinds of players. Again, they probably, even if they have the cap space for Durant's not choosing them over the Warriors. So LeBron's not choosing them over the Lakers, right? So I just, that's ultimately to me where they end up. And so if you have that cap space, you don't bring those guys back. You just keep bringing in like the 1 and 2 year rental type deals. But you don't end up with the 14th pick. Instead, you end up probably with a top 3 or 4 pick in the draft. That to me, is what could have dramatically changed this franchise.
And we talked about that because, obviously there's two main possibilities here, although, of course, there's an infinite number of alternative realities as well. But in this scenario, let's say they get a top 5 pick in that 2017 draft. Instead of selecting Bam Adebayo later on in the lottery, now all of a sudden that changes. Are you in play for a Jason Tatum? Obviously, right. Boston had the number 1 pick in the draft. They traded down, letting Philadelphia move up and getting Markelle Fultz. That pick hasn't really panned out. Fultz hasn't really turned into the player they thought he would be at number 1. So who knows who that plays out.
Of alternative realities, if Markelle Fultz never goes to weird Philadelphia where everything gets weird, if he just gets selected by Miami, does he look amazing right now? Is all this weird stuff that happened to him on the Sixers ever happening? Like, it's impossible to really know.
Well, maybe the Heat's training staff detects whatever's wrong with his wrist and or his shoulder right. And lets him heal during that summer because, again, they're a bad 20-win team. It's not like they care about rushing Fultz. They've invested their number 1 pick in him or whatever, and they allow him to be the player that he's supposed to be rather than trying to rush the process as quickly as Philadelphia did.
Right, and you look at other guys that were taken in the top 5-ish and that were available. Fultz, Lonzo Ball went to number 2 to the Lakers. Mm-hmm. Tatum obviously ended up with Boston. And there's other guys. Josh Jackson was highly touted. I don't see Miami taking Josh Jackson right after they
already had Winslow
Justice Winslow there. Yeah. De'Aaron Fox, I could see him being the kind of guy that Pat Riley would fall in love with, right, and end up taking De'Aaron Fox. He looks amazing this year in Sacramento.
Right. Deion Waiters is under contract, and you need somebody else to be a ball handler alongside Goran Dragic, who's already under contract.
Ooh, drive and kick offense with Fox and Dragic. Oh, that'd be amazing. Jonathan Isaac seems like a kind of guy that this team would have taken. Like, he's kind of like Bam in that draft where just a lot of raw talent. That you can just sort of fall in love with. We heard that they were high on Larry Markkanen, who ended up going 7 to Minnesota, and they ended up flipping him for Jimmy Butler, and I know we want to talk about that because that's really where things get interesting at this point because Jimmy Butler was traded on draft night.
Right, so that's the second part of what happens if the team goes 20-something and 60 that season rather than 41 and 41 is that they have such a great draft pick. And Miami, notoriously not caring too much about the draft, much like this co-host, they would have used that pick to acquire a superstar, and they would have been able to pry a guy like Jimmy Butler a season sooner than they expected to do so. And then this is where everything starts to really change, is that all of a sudden, now you have Jimmy Butler on this roster. Let's say you package a top 5, top 10 pick in the 2017 draft in exchange for Jimmy Butler. Maybe you move that pick alongside Hassan Whiteside that Chicago had reportedly had interest in developing. Mm-hmm. So you can move Whiteside, that first pick, perhaps a high upside guy like Josh Richardson or Justice Winslow in exchange for, let's say, Jimmy Butler and Robin Lopez, who they didn't feel they needed in 2017 during the 2017 offseason. They were looking to offload that contract because he was the one veteran that they already had on the roster. So it would have been a great opportunity for them. They would have still been able to select Lauri Markkanen like they did. They would have had a future ball handler to make up for Zach LaVine, who was Minnesota had sent over for in the Butler trade. So from Chicago's perspective, all of a sudden you have a quote-unquote star center in Hassan Whiteside. You've got a potential all-star in Josh Richardson or Justice Winslow, and you've also got that top 10 pick in the draft. So they move Butler and Robin Lopez happily, and all of a sudden now Miami's team is built around Goran Dragic, Jimmy Butler. You keep either Winslow or Richardson, whoever you keep on there. Maybe you still try to re-sign James Johnson as a versatile four-type player, but you've got Robin Lopez at the center position. And then maybe you still are able to sign Kelly Olynyk as a versatile 4-5, and that changes the makeup of this team pretty evenly. So, of course, then you already have your first superstar in place, and as we talked about this past offseason, maybe that changes things as far as who you can acquire. Maybe they're in even deeper as far as being a potential trade partner for Kyrie Irving during that same offseason. Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's these kind of possibilities really, really start to get interesting when you talk about all the different potential options.
We'll be right back after this break. This episode is sponsored by Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees and are powered by rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion batteries that last up to 12 hours on each charge. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're wearing them. Perfect for any friend or family on your holiday gift list. Great for anyone who works outdoors, skiers, snowboarders, or anybody that loves the outdoors or hates being cold. Action Heat clothing provides toasty warmth and comfort for your whole body, including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments. You can stay warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Heat. Make winter activities more enjoyable with a blast of warmth. Action Heat is the perfect solution to keep you toasty and warm, even in the most frigid winter weather. We've got a special deal for our listeners to save 20% off of your entire order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything Action Heat has to offer. That's actionheat.com/lockedon, or use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Stay toasty and warm while you enjoy all of your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. Yeah, if Jimmy Butler's there, right, and maybe you've moved off the Whiteside deal, are you more of an option for, I don't know, are you able to go get a DeAndre Jordan or a DeMarcus Cousins at center this last summer? Do you get more involved in maybe an Aaron Gordon or a Julius? Oh, yeah, speaking of trades, absolutely. But, you know, even just free agents that might see Miami as a, you know, Jimmy Butler is now the recruiter. Is he able to get, are you more involved in restricted guys like Julius Randle and Aaron Gordon or Marcus Smart? A guy like J.J. Redick, who would fit really nicely next to Jimmy Butler, as Philadelphia is finding out right now, and they have become friends already with the Sixers. Like, are you able to pry Redick away? And now you've got this really interesting team. It's kind of an interesting argument to think about. Okay, if the Heat would have ended up with a top five pick, which they were on pace to do before that 30-11 stretch, would they be better off flipping it for Jimmy Butler, or having just taken one of these top five guys in that draft? Because that was, as we found out, a loaded draft. We hadn't even talked about Donovan Mitchell. Would they have been the team to reach for Donovan Mitchell, who ended up going 13, one pick before the Heat took Bam Adebayo at 14? So a lot of interesting things, but certainly what we could both agree on is, yeah, their outlook would look a lot better if they had never gone 30-11, which is unfortunate. That said, that 30-11 stretch was a lot of fun. I'm not saying it was worth it. I'm just saying let's not look at it with such objectivity where we're saying that it was a complete waste of time, because we had a ball when it was happening. And it did end up kind of setting the course for this franchise and kind of cornering them into this where they're at for 3 or 4 years. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know where else to go with this, because There's so many ways that you can. You said it's a slippery slope, and that's exactly what it is.
I mean, we can look at whether or not they would have even kept that pick, you know, because, you know, or what would have happened if they had kept the pick rather than trying to parlay that into a Jimmy Butler or another superstar trade. Maybe they would have been the one to try and acquire Kyrie Irving or something like that. Who knows?
Right.
But, you know, what if they had not had a top five pick that would have had incredible value, but maybe they thought somebody in the top 10 or maybe even one or two picks earlier than Adebayo. Maybe they had selected Donovan Mitchell, and all of a sudden, does he get the same opportunity to grow in Miami the way that he did in Utah last season?
Remember, yes.
They had Dante Exum, who was lost to injury. Rubio was still trying to figure out his place on the team. And then all of a sudden, Donovan gets that opportunity as a rookie, and he's able to make the most of it. In Miami, would he had been able to flourish alongside Goran Dragic in the backcourt? I mean, that's an interesting... Yeah,
Donovan Mitchell is amazing. He's a future Hall of Famer. He would flourish anywhere.
Okay. speaking of objectivity. You look at Miami and how they've used the draft in the past. Obviously, they've made a number of picks with, you know, Winslow and Dwayne Wade and Justice Winslow, Bam Adebayo, et cetera. So they've had some draft picks. They've made some good choices, but they've also used that pick in trades. So I'm curious to, you know, whether or not they would have seen that top 10 in that draft class and said, there's a potential superstar here that we can build around the way they saw Dwayne Wade in 2005.
Yeah.
No
way to know, right? All right, let's get to a few more mailbag questions. This one comes from Jeff, who asks, they say that coaches tank, not players. Watching our transition D last night, I have to wonder. Also, does Whiteside care about anything other than double-doubles? Dude is jogging down the court like he's the first man back when the other team is already into their offense. So kind of a two-parter there from Jeff. So they say that coaches tank, not players. Ben Golliver, who jumps on the show every once in a while on Locked On NBA Tuesdays, has this theory about player tanking, but I think that's more to try to benefit their own careers. I don't think that that's what Whiteside is doing. I don't think that there's any way that this... Like, I don't think he's trying to force his way out of Miami, basically, like a Jimmy Butler, for example, in Minnesota. But I don't think he does care about anything other than double-doubles, David. I think that that's all he cares about is just getting the stats.
Well, are you addressing the second part of the question as far as, you know, whether coaches tank or players tank? Because, I mean, I feel like there's still something left to untap there.
Okay.
From my perspective, I don't think the players are tanking. I think they just, unfortunately, they're just not that good. And I think that everybody loves being in Miami. I think they love the system here. I could see how Spoelstra's, you know, rigorous practices might rub some people the wrong way. Not in Miami. I think the guys that they have on the roster, maybe that's why they made those moves in the 2017 offseason to bring back a Deion and a James Johnson and add a Kelly Olynyk. They love the work. And so even a guy like Goran Dragic, I think, really does appreciate that kind of level of work.
Players don't tank to go get a better draft pick. Players think they can get the job done. Players tank if and when players tank, if that's a theory, if that's a real thing, they do it to benefit themselves, not the team.
Right. Exactly. And the players have chemistry. I think there's camaraderie there. I think it's genuine. I think they like each other on this roster. Even a dipshit like Hassan is probably well-liked in that locker room. So I don't think that the players are tanking. I think that there are problems with the personnel, and they're just not good enough. Yeah.
I don't think coaches tank either. I think coaches genuinely try to go out there and win games. And I just...
Right.
And so to me, it's the... If anybody tanks, it's the front office thing. Right. And right now, I think Miami is not full on tanking. I just don't think that they're very good. I still think they're going out and they're trying to win games and they're trying to field the best teams possible. And Pat Riley will try to make the team better before he tries to make the team worse.
Right.
For better or worse. I you may agree or disagree, but I just generally think that that's what Pat Riley is going to do. I don't know that Spoelstra or these players are actively trying to lose games. I would say that they're not.
With the exception of like Brett Brown, if you're a coach of a losing team, you're probably going to get fired. And it's rare that you'll have that kind of caveat from a front office saying, no, don't worry about how bad you are. In fact, be as bad as possible. You'll still have a job here next season. That's rarely the case, if ever, with the exception of Brown, like I said. So maybe Kenny Atkinson in Brooklyn has the same kind of wink-wink deal where it's like, we don't care how many games you win. We're going to still keep you here because we believe in your ability as a coach.
there's an understanding between the front office and the coach, like, yeah, this is a process, and we want you to, you know, not focus so much on winning games, but just build your culture and, right. and create the system and put that in place so that when we do have the right talent, you can just kind of get That's off and running with that. And that's what Spoelstra is able to do with anybody. You give him anybody. He took this team to the playoffs last year. That is incredible. And so I don't think that. Oh my God. All right. Last question comes from Mark, who asks, will the Heat retire Udonis Haslam's jersey? Yes.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question of that. I don't see anybody ever wearing the number 40 again. Like, you don't have to be the best player on this team. I think you just have to mean as much as Haslam has. The fact that he's been a part of this team for as long as he has, that he's a part of South Florida culture, that he's ubiquitous to, you know, Heat culture, I think is such an important distinction for him. There's no way that anybody will ever wear that number jersey for the Heat again. Unless it's Udonis's son somehow or something like that.
If there's a chance he gets a statue too, and
throwing a mouthpiece.
Yeah. I mean, Haslam is legendary, and by the way, like, can we unretire Michael Jordan's jersey and Dan Marino's jersey? Because that's just a bad look. Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl. Michael Jordan never played for the Heat. Hmm. Why they have nothing? None of them are related to the Heat. Why are those jerseys retired?
I don't know. That's a very good
question. I mean, Marino's jersey, like, Bam wears 13, right?
Right, so it doesn't really matter. So it's
that doesn't matter.
Not quite retired. I think it's more symbolic than anything else.
But it's, like, weird that it's there. I don't know. Just, like, can we not do that? All right. That's the second part of our mailbag. So first part went up Monday. This was the second part. We appreciate everybody who took some time to ask us some questions via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or emailed them to us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Remember, you can listen and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or whatever you use to get your podcasts. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.